Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Raya Affairs. My name is Francia Morales, and I'll be your host for today's episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind-the-scenes of decision-makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you in wherever you are. As always, I would like to issue a disclaimer to our listeners that expressed opinions in this episode are welcome, even though they may not be a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. This episode is the fourth in a series of six as part of the IE Raya Summer Research Program of 2024. Raya has invited 12 IE University students to join our think tank and spend 9 weeks researching a figure from around the world to try to answer a simple question. Are they a climate leader? During the research, students have done a deep dive of the person's background, policies, and the impact of said policies in an effort to bring light to the diverse ways in which every person, no matter the role that they play in society, can contribute to the global climate change policy framework. In today's episode, we will be focusing on Carlos Manuel Rodriguez from Costa Rica. Here with us, we have Francisco Geldres and Valeria Flores Siles. Would you two like to introduce yourselves?
Hello, my name is Francisco Geldres, as Francia said. I'm originally from Chile, but I grew up in Argentina, and I'm studying law and international relations at IE.
And hi, I'm Valeria Flores Siles, and I'm from Bolivia, and I study in IE. I study economics and international relations.
Thank you very much for your introduction. Before we dive into your interview for today, which I'm excited for, given that I've had the pleasure of editing your report for the program, could you tell us which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world, would you like to have a conversation with? Francisco, let's start with you.
Oh, this is interesting. I think I would have dinner with Emperor Hirohito from Japan. He was the emperor during World War II. I know it's like niche and random, but I studied him for the IB in high school, and I just found it impressive how after World War II ended, his role basically lost most of its credibility, and he had to do things an emperor would never do. So I just went to ask him about his experience of what happens when you stop being a leader, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Overall, I think the World War II was the nail on the coffin of the empires of the world. So that would be very interesting. Valeria, what about you?
I was thinking about it, and I think Juana Azurduy, she's a Bolivian figure. Not many people talk about her, but she helped in the independence from Spain, Bolivian independence, and she's one of the biggest woman figure in Bolivia. And I have so many questions about her background because we don't have many story aspects from her life. And yeah, a lot of things was lost. So I would love to talk to her and make like an amazing interview and write another paper about her.
That sounds really amazing. Just the idea of sharing a cup of coffee from someone who lived through something so life-changing or like world-changing as, well, the fall of another empire. And with that very nice note, we begin your guys' interview. So before we get into all of the nitty-gritty of his policies, could you guys please let us know, who is Carlos Manuel Rodriguez?
So Carlos Manuel Rodriguez is many things. I would like to start by using his words, where I have this quote in my head that's from him, and he said, "I define myself as a lawyer by training, a politician by choice, and a conservationist at heart." So going back to his background, he grew up in Costa Rica during the periods of the highest levels of deforestation in the country, where Costa Rica was actually one of the most deforested countries in Latin America. His father was a renowned lawyer, and his mother and grandfather, they were both very passionate about nature and animals. So that's where he says he got like a certain sensitivity towards the environment. And then, of course, going to his grandfather's coffee farm every summer, which was next to a national park, he grew up around this love for nature. Then moving on to his career, he actually decided to study law and became the first environmental lawyer in Costa Rica, which is very significant because then he used that to get into politics and develop incredible policies. And then he started working for the Minister of Energy and the Environment in Costa Rica. He did so 3 times. first in 1998, then in 2002, and then in 2018. And currently, he is the CEO and chairperson of GEF, which is the Global Environment Facility.
Talking about his homeland, what are the main climatic challenges facing Costa Rica today?
Thank you, Francia, for asking that, because it's really important to mention and know these challenges, because he based his work and like the policies that he worked on in the main challenges of his country. With Francisco, we did the research, and the three main we found, it was first that they have two different oceans in their coast. If we talk about where are they located, geographical position, they are exposed to two different oceans, the Pacific Ocean and the Caribbean Sea. So this makes them, Costa Rica, very vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. Since they are right there in the middle, anything that can happen in both sides, they are the main target. And also like climatic changes such, I don't know, rising sea levels, increasing of severity of storms or anything, it's gonna affect to them. So we need to consider that they are exposed to the both seas. And the second one is that Costa Rica still faces the pollution of water, woods, and oceans. Francisco already mentioned that during the 40s, 50s, 60s, they were affected for a lot of environmental crisis. So they are still with this, mostly the water pollution. And now they are working in policies that we're going to talk later because Carlos Manuel Rodriguez targeted this. But yeah, so we need to consider that they have water pollution. And the third one, it's deforestation. Francisco already mentioned this one, but we need to talk about this and highlight this because during the 50s and 50s, they have a high deforestation, mostly also during the 70s. And we need to know that they have a lot of biodiversity. Costa Rica has a lot of biodiversity, one of the most biodiverse countries in America. So imagine how deforestation affected that. So deforestation, water pollution, the location where they are.
Wow, okay, so how has Carlos Manuel Rodriguez helped Costa Rica address these issues? How has he designed policies to address their vulnerable location? How has he designed policies to stop deforestation? And moreover, how has he helped to fix environment pollution, like water pollution, as you mentioned, or woods pollution, which I had never heard of before?
Okay, so Carlos Manuel Rodriguez actually did a lot for the country and a lot for the world. The first and, in my opinion, my favorite policy is the Payment for Environmental Services, or PES policy. In Spanish, it's Pago por Servicios Ambientales. So this passed into Costa Rican law in 1997. He played a big role in coming up with this policy and also lobbying in Congress to get it to pass. What it basically does is that the government, through the National Fund of Forest Financiation, or FONAFIFO, they pay owners of forests for their reforestation services. In fact, when you look at the policy, there is a lot that is included in this forest conservation activities. There are very specific guidelines, a report for more details. And what this policy did was the first of its kind, because from the Ministry of the Environment and Energy, they, quoting from them, it said that they changed the traditional concept of a subsidiary or incentive that previous legislation had on the topic, and it changes to the concept of economic recognition for environmental services. Actually, Carlos Manuel Rodriguez said that this was such a new policy that it was actually hard trying to pass it in Parliament. The second policy is that he created the first ever marine and coastal program within the Ministry of Environment and Energy, which he worked at. This was in 2004 when he was in his second term. This program was also revolutionary because the marine and coastal conservation had been neglected as part of previous conservation laws. And this is important because marine biodiversity had been significantly impacted with all this deforestation and overfishing that happened during the 40s, 50s, 60s, as Valeria explained. And what this policy did is that they tried and then they successfully attempted to convert to give 25% of Costa Rica's exclusive economic zone and dedicate that solely to conservation and restoration, which had never been done before. This is impressive because it was the first time it was done. And then the third policy is, stay with me because the name is quite long, is the United Nations Plan for Reducing Emissions from Deforestation and forest degradation in developing countries. So the acronym is REDD and REEDD plus. And the plus stands for other forest conservation activities that aren't included in forest degradation. So as the name suggests, this program primarily tries to fund activities and programs that try to reverse the effects of climate change and help with the reconstruction and maintenance of biodiversity in Costa Rica. So what they did to get the money to fund this is that they determined a budget of $1 billion between the National System of Conservation Areas, SINAC, which is an agency in Costa Rica, and FONAFIFO, which is the one I previously introduced. This budget will go towards strengthening the programs that I mentioned that help prevent and control the effects of climate change in Costa Rica.
Wow, these sound like really large undertakings for such a small country, especially one that, as you mentioned, is quite vulnerable to the effects of climate change. So what have been the main limitations that Carlos Manuel Rodriguez had to face when attempting to implement these policies?
Oh, yes, I would love to answer that question. But first of all, I want to do a parenthesis. Francisco mentioned about the pago por servicios ambientales, or payment for environmental services, the PSA. That's also one of my favorite policies, Francisco. And we actually, that's why we chose it to write our article, the hot or cold article that we invite to everyone who is listening if they want to have more information about it. So yeah, so closing parentheses and now going through your amazing question. What were the limitations? So this is really interesting because we didn't find so many, because we saw that Costa Rica actually was a really collaborative country, or like have a really collaborative government and community to work on. So the only challenge that we can find, as Francisco mentioned, for example, with the PSA, is that because it was something new, it was really hard to pass. And also the government, they have different challenges, because Carlos Manuel Rodriguez mentioned he was on and off from the government, because they changed the government different times. Depending on the government, he was like working as a minister and then like getting out of the government. But when he was not working in the government, he was working with NGOs or research institutions aside from his main projects. So he was still working on it. So maybe we wonder like if these government changes didn't happen or didn't affect it to him, maybe he will be working as a minister for like longer periods, and maybe more things could be happening or something like that. So that's one of the challenges. We already mentioned the different challenges that Costa Rica have. So they always focus, like for example, with the water pollution that is really heavy, and that actually Carlos Manuel Rodriguez mentioned that it was such a big problem. There was a problem that we need to resolve in the next decade. Always they want to target those main climate change challenges. So those are the main focus. So maybe it's another challenge because they want to focus in these problems. And then, as I mentioned before, Costa Rica is really collaborative, and actually Carlos Manuel Rodriguez mentioned this in another interview, that since Costa Rica was like this, for example, in the 40s and the 60s, his grandfather and his father's generation, he mentioned that they had a lot of commitment to mobilize resources for education and healthcare. They started actually also to take care of the environment. They had the civil rights reform in the 40s, the creation of the higher education system, social care and health system in the 40s as well, and the abolishment of the army. So we can see how it's like we can use the word pacifist country. You know, they want to take care of their citizens. They don't want war. They want to take care, move education. This country has just an amazing background, and that's where he started, with this background. And that's also something that we can take that inspire him to make more changes. It was possible to make changes before. Why not? We can like keep doing these changes. And also they, in their grandfather and father's time, they also have environmental sector was not an exception. They did a lot of changes. Also, something that we need to mention is that the government and people were together really often, more than other countries. For example, I'm from Bolivia, and like it's really hard. We're always protesting. It's one against the other, right? But in Costa Rica, it's another I don't know, it's another. They have always reached a consensus, and the Costa Rica has always tried to avoid conflict. They put aside their conflict and their issues, and they agreed to work on these big, big issues that are affecting the country, and always get into a middle ground. Carlos Manuel Rodriguez mentioned that this was a big, big factor that helped him to make it so many changes. So even though, yeah, they had challenges, we mentioned some of them, they have challenges. For sure. But nothing is perfect. But they also are really collaborative. And that's something that really, really helped. So, yeah.
Well, that sounds really great. And as you mentioned, Carlos Manuel Rodriguez is a pioneer, but he was able to pick up where past generations left off. And I actually wanted to inquire a bit more about this. You mentioned the generation of his grandfather and the generation of his father, all of whom fought for different kinds of reforms in Costa Rica. And so what made Carlos Manuel Rodriguez want to pursue climate policy? What made that the focus of his career?
Okay, so to answer this, I think it's very important to continue to expand on what Valeria said. Because the country culture in Costa Rica in regards to pro-environmental policies was huge. I mean, you have both pressure from the government and from the people to try to pursue a more green agenda. This, of course, was a very good pressure point for Carlos Manuel Rodriguez, since he was the minister of the Ministry of the Environment and Energy. So, of course, he had this pressure. I always find it interesting to mention this statistic because they did a poll in Costa Rica, and it showed that over 90% of respondents, they would rather have a more strict climate policy, even if it cost the country economic profit. And we can obviously see how this translates to government policy, because they have policies such as the plan for decarbonization and having the negative carbon emissions by 2050, and also the full ban on fossil fuel extractions, which during the time that Carlos Manuel Rodriguez was a teenager was one of the biggest industries in the country. I feel like the change from that during that time period is huge. And now focusing more on Carlos Manuel Rodriguez, I mean, I feel like he was a lover of the earth and the planet and the environment ever since he was a little kid. I read a ton of his biographies with Valeria, and he actually said so many times that he was appalled by the level of deforestation when he was a teenager. That was at its highest point, as we mentioned. He even said that one of his core memories growing up was seeing the amount of timber and cattle trucks in the streets, which were a product of deforestation. So, of course, he felt this responsibility towards climate, which then we see it. We see how this is translated into his decision to studying law. I feel like this throughout his career continued to motivate him to come up with these new policies that would help the environment, because he said that he was between studying law or studying biology. And after studying law, he was able to easily find this segue into politics, which allowed him to make change at a greater level. I think that is basically it. So he had very altruistic motivations because he loved the earth, but also there was this pressure from the country culture.
That's great. With all of this gusto that he brought into his political career and all of this enthusiasm and hope that Costa Rica would get better, has Carlos Manuel Rodriguez ultimately been successful in implementing these policies? Have they worked in changing Costa Rica?
Yes. So let's talk about them. We already mentioned them, like what they were about, if they were implemented or not. So let's talk about it, if they were successful, because of course, one is like implementing them and then seeing if they work. So for example, with the payment for environmental services, PES, or AKA our favorite policy with Francisco, it overall worked. Yes, they have a good implementation. But other countries wanted also to do something similar. It was something new, mostly like in Latin America. So yeah, it was successful. The other countries wanted to replicate it. However, this was a good start. Carlos Manuel Rodriguez mentioned that it was a good start for change, because it was something new, but it's not just the last solution or just the only step that we need to take. So for sure, it's an amazing idea. It's an amazing start, but bigger programs worldwide needs to be implemented. Because also we need to mention that Costa Rica, they are doing a lot of changes, but it's like a small country. Unfortunately, it's a small country. We wish like bigger countries can do similar things, but it's not happening. So maybe having like a program similar in bigger countries so we can have more change in like a bigger scale will be needed. But overall, the payment of environmental services, PES, worked. It was implemented successfully. It worked. It's an amazing step. Of course, it worked overall. And then for this, another one that we talk about, the Marine and Coastal Program within the Minister of Environmental and Energy in Costa Rica. Yes, it worked. It was implemented. They restored damage and forested land. Like, they improved it. They increased the amount of regulation in the area. And yeah, so it worked. It was more regulations, more restriction. They successfully gave more positive changes to this area that it was affected for so many years. So we can say that this was also an amazing program, and it was successfully implemented. And then for the last one that has the long name, the REDD program, in short, I'm gonna say it. This is controversial because Carlos Manuel Rodriguez mentioned that, yes, it was an amazing idea, good for you, it was amazing, big, it had a really nice scope, right? But it wasn't successfully implemented. He mentioned that the program was a big failure because the people who were in charge of it, they didn't run it, like, they didn't know how to actually target and help the forest. So it was an amazing idea, but it was not targeting what they needed. Good idea, but they don't understand how effectively take care of the forest, in summary. But yeah, but it was an amazing idea, so maybe keep implementing this and keep talking about this. And I think they are making different changes now because it's an amazing program, it's a good idea, so they keep working to change this and make it better. It was not that successful.
Great. And I believe you mentioned before, or maybe you hadn't, but as your editor, I also know this from background information that the REDD and the REDD Plus has not been limited to Costa Rica. And it's actually made its way through international organizations, including efforts by the UN. And programs like that one have been attempted to be implemented elsewhere, which in itself can also be seen as a successful diffusion of a good idea. And hopefully it will be well implemented abroad. So next we have a bit of a two-part question, a question that combines both arguments that you answer within your report and then also details that you touch upon in your article, which will be on our website. And that question is, what can our audience learn from the case of Carlos Manuel Rodriguez's climate policies, and why should they matter to our listeners?
Okay, so I feel like this is a very interesting question, and you can answer it in two ways. I feel like for individuals, what you can learn from this is that, and this is especially important coming from Latin America, from a relatively small country, that no matter where you come from, if you put in the work, you put in the effort, you can still have a big impact. Because Carlos Manuel Rodriguez, even though he did come from a relatively privileged family in Costa Rica, since his father was a renowned lawyer, he did come from a small country and he had a huge impact. And not only in his country, but in the world. And see where he's now. He's working as the CEO of GEF, which is huge. I think this also says something huge about young democracies, because Costa Rica was a young democracy and they are now pioneering in green policy, and they are one of the leaders of ecotourism in the world. It just proves that countries that are considered developed and third world countries that are many times looked down at on the international stage can still have a global impact and can still be pioneers in the field of the environment or any other field. In regards to climate policies itself, I feel like it also just shows that you don't need a huge budget, you don't need a huge history as a country to create programs that will actually change the economic landscape of the country, which is what the PES program did. You just need a couple of good ideas, and then you need a little bit of funding, convincing people, and a lot of effort. You don't need the biggest budget in the world to make an impact. So I feel like that's crucial.
Yeah, that sounds, I think that that's generally good advice. Start with what you have. And it is what Carlos Manuel Rodriguez seems to have done. And luckily, also all of the political factors that he needed on his side were there, and he was able to really drive this impact home. As your final question, which is also the final question of your report and the overall thesis that you have to make, I want to ask you to, in your own words, is Carlos Manuel Rodriguez a climate leader?
I think all our listeners are gonna agree with me, with us, with Francisco and me, and definitely. We already talked about so many things he did since he was little. He was like driven with this passion of climate. He was a curious kid. Then he saw like a deforestation and he wanted to make a great impact. He did. He was a curious kid. He wanted to make positive change. He then studied law. And then focused in environmental law and then came back to his country because he studied outside to focus. And he was the first environmental, like a focus, like lawyer that focused in environmental aspect. So he was the first one in the country. And then with this, he made changes. Also something that we didn't mention, but outside from politics, he had a watchdog group with his friends where he was going and protesting and stopping the logging companies. That's, I think it's really important to mention this because he didn't wait for like getting into politics or to the government to make changes. He was already trying to make it with his own hands and with his friends. And then this drive him to join the government because he wanted to make bigger impact. So from the beginning, we can see that he wanted to focus his career in this. Something that Francisco always mentioned to me because he said this, he told me, Valeria, you had to mention this, is that they have a meet, like a reunion with his class. You know, they graduated from high school and they had a reunion and all of them were sharing, you know, his friends, classmates or former classmates about how they went through fields that made them money. But Carlos Manuel Rodriguez was one of the few that didn't, he was not driven by money. He was driven by making impact. So he knew from the beginning he wanted to change things, have a big social impact, and that's what he did. Many different people recognized him as a leader. He got awards. For example, he received the first annual Conservation Leadership Award from the Blue Moon Fund in 2006. And now we already mentioned he is the leader of the GEF. One month ago, he was elected again to keep leading this big organization that is making so many changes around the world and giving funding to different projects. He already left the government and he's still doing the change. He wants to have this big impact. So from he was little until now, he is making impact. And something I also want to mention that personally, it really inspired me because I love also environment, but I'm studying economics and international relations. And with economics, I was like, how can I make a big impact with this? I was like, I won't be able or like something not direct. But seeing him how like he was like, he's not studying biology or something focused only 100% in environmental aspect, but he's studying law. But he dropped like this law to make big impact in his country. So it really makes me think about how I can use what I know, what I'm studying to make big impact.
That's really incredible, Valeria. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you, Francisco, as well for coming to speak with me today. It has been obviously delightful to speak with the both of you about your research. I've been watching the both of you collect this data, put it in a report, and put it in an article for the past few months now. And it does really fill me with joy to see it come to fruition and to hear you speak today. I am very much looking forward to reading your full report once it's finalized and published on the website, as well as reading your article, which will also be published on our website. And for all of our listeners, you can find this material at riagroup.org. If you like this episode, please make sure to share with your friends. Once again, this has been the fourth episode in a series of six as part of the IE RIA Summer Research Program of 2024. Also, if you like this episode, make sure to stay tuned for the next episodes, which will be shared on our social media such as Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. As always, thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.